Welcome to the Planning and Community Development meeting for Monday, July 17th, 2023. My name is Kathy Holgarty. I am the chair of this committee, and we have guests, so we'll go around with introductions for everyone, starting with Councilmember McLeod.
Councilmember Tom McLeod, committee member.
Nora Gerloff, Community Development Director.
Neil Tabor, Senior Chairman. Peter Vera, Citizen League.
Well, Bill Combs, also a citizen of Tequila. I work here.
I'm Isaac Moore. I'm an assistant planner with the Department of Community Development.
Derek Speck, Economic Development.
Deshaun Quinn, Council Member of Committee.
So I have a question for our committee, for my committee members. Are you amenable to moving item C and D up to the beginning of the agenda? So as this is written here, we will go C, D, A, B. Okay. So that's how we'll start out with the multifamily property tax exemption program. And we have Derek presenting. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. So what you have in the packet from this item starts on page 31. And just as a brief reminder, in early February, when Economic Development was presenting to this committee about our 2023 work plan, we had shown working on the MFTE in the third quarter. At that time, the committee was pretty clear we wanted to expedite the MFTE sooner. And so we came back with a guided overall policy considerations for an MFTE program. So at the April meeting, we provided you the policy considerations, pros, cons, all of that. So based on that discussion, this committee then said, we'd like to move forward with the next step in the MFT program by including Tukwila South in the program. And you asked, well, what's the simplest way to do that? And so I gave you advice on the easiest way. And then you said, okay, go do that and come back. In April, you know, we had put other projects on hold to work on the MFTE. So we said, okay, we'll come back. We need to go back to economic development strategy and other things. So we will come back to you in the third quarter. So we are on back here the first month of the third quarter with a proposed MFTE. And so what you've got before you here is to do the simplest changes possible to include Tukwila South is what this staff report describes. Mm-hmm. There are about four changes we would really need to make in order to do that. And then the fifth change on page 32 is just there's some housekeeping, minor housekeeping things. And so basically, the first change is what you would expect. It's changing the geographic area called the residential targeted area, and you'll see a map in your packet with that. The second change is changing the application period since that has already expired, so we're proposing extending that to 2028. The third change is putting a cap on the eligible number of units that could apply. We're proposing a cap of 800. You might remember at the April meeting, we talked about a cap of more 300 or 350 or 400 or something in that range. The reason I've increased it to 800 is because we realized we think to do this and meet state law, we have to include the entire South Center District. We don't think Tukwila South by itself would qualify. And so if you include the whole South Center District, then increasing the number of units makes sense. Otherwise, 400 might not be enough if other applications come through elsewhere in the South Center District. So that's where the 800 came from. And you could think of it in terms of how many developments would that be? And you could think in general, apartment building developments these days might be a minimum of 100 units. They could be up to 200 units. They could be larger, of course. But if you figure 200 units, that's about four big developments. If there was a smaller size development, that could be up to eight developments that we're talking about. And then we did add in here a recommendation on including a criteria where for when they apply and they get a step in the process that we called a conditional certificate of acceptance, that then the applicant would need to submit a complete building permit application within 18 months. And the reason for this is by setting a cap in the number of units, there's sort of an incentive for developers to go out right now and turn applications in right away, even if they don't really have projects that they could really move forward on. And so by putting that extra building permit criteria in there, it's a way to kind of have developers submit when they think they've really got some momentum behind a project. And then the housekeeping I mentioned. So with that, really, if you're interested in what's being proposed here, What we'd be recommending is that you would forward this to next Monday's council meeting. And what this is, the action in this item is really not adopting these programs. It's simply at this stage is adopting a resolution of intent that you're going to consider these options. And that's a requirement in state law that if you're creating a new area, that you have to have a public hearing and that you provide notice through a resolution of intent. So that's what this process is. And that's why what would happen is we would, if the council says go forward next Monday night, COW, we'd like it to go to the special meeting then next Monday night for the council to adopt the resolution. If that happens, we'll do the notice and publication in the Seattle Times. There's some requirements around that. And then it would come back to the full council. That we're asking it to not come back to this committee then to save time. It would go to the full council with the proposed ordinance, and that would be in August. I think I've got the date here. And then if the council likes it, that would be August 14th would be where the council would hold the public hearing. And if they like it and want to approve it, they would be voting on August 21st. So that's sort of the shortest time schedule that meets the requirements. With that, we're available for any questions you have.
We'll start with Councilor Rickman.
I think you went through I didn't really have any questions because this is not the first time we've had this. It's really a question of, did you cover the areas that we needed consideration? So my question is on the third, what you call it, under the staff recommendations, when it talks about a limited number of eligible units. And, I was thinking about not so much justification, but a measurement of if this option would be exercised, because I think for a while we heard there was an interest, but then no one came forward because of the potential complications. So with the intent, would we measure the outcome? I'm assuming yes, but I think officially we should measure the level of participation and interest.
So Councilmember, when you say measure participation, you mean the number of applications we receive? We certainly do. I mean, we track. I mean, as so far today, we've only received one application for every project that the city's approved, and we've got three projects that have been approved. So that would be very easy for us to keep track of the applications that we receive.
Right, and I'm assuming four, that's one thing, but thinking about the economic development plan and the other things where there's kind of some overlay, you have a sense of what the market is saying is of interest. So that was just my thing, it's just the learnings that could come from this as we roll it. And to me, the 800 makes sense, and I would just, seems like a lot though, but the area that we're talking about designating is the one I would prefer versus like the map, like the whole thing.
Yeah.
So I think we have to be intentional with what we do and creating spaces. And then I just wonder, is there a, thinking about the state legislative agenda and what we've seen and heard over the many years around our willingness to work with developers, allow for opportunities for new housing, and I know at least from many organizations there's a lot of support in this area. So I think also kind of the measurement and the finding should inform our state legislative agenda and our communication back. That's not necessarily a requirement, but we have some requirements that we've been able to avoid, but I also think how you avoid it is being able to show your work. Hello.
Thank you.
So when we talk of more housing, and I'm not talking to residents, of course nobody wants their neighborhood disrupted. And we talked about them densifying the urban center. So I like that you expanded this beyond the Tuckwell South. I think we have to find a solution along this line. So I think this is really good. Is there a pushback as to why that's not a good idea that I haven't read or heard yet? Because it makes a lot of sense to me. But have you picked up on any pushback that somebody would want the whole urban center included?
I have not heard pushback from any individuals about not including the whole urban center. Although I'm not sure how many people have seen this report or rolled out. I think that as it becomes more public, the issue of tax shift can become a very sensitive issue.
Sure.
And so, but we pretty much addressed those concerns, those questions in the April staff report. I think an answer at this stage is 800 units is a low enough number that it keeps that tax shift concern. Probably at a level that's probably pretty moderate. The bigger that number gets, the bigger that concern occurs.
Right. So for a perspective like the confluence, that's 100 units.
Yep.
Yeah. I like the direction this is going. I like the thought process of expanding the urban center. And because we've had this before already, I don't have any really more questions at the moment here, but I like where this is going.
Okay.
So look at page 32, I have some questions. The first is the application period. Well, first I want to make some prefacing comments, and that is that even since we saw this last, I've been to several seminars, including AWC, where they talk about the importance of MFTE as an incentive for building, and then other seminars where they said people simply are not building without incentives. It's not happening. And also that those incentives need to not have a lot of barriers in them, because otherwise it's very competitive as far as building. So my overall thought here is that this is really what we want to do. Another thing is looking through the existing ordinance. It is for the 8 and the 12-year exemption. That's what we would do, 8 and 12-year exemption. So that would stay the same, and I totally support that. I think that's appropriate in, for this area to do. But let's talk about things that could be, I'm just going to say it, potential barriers, okay? Mm-hmm. So the first one is staff recommends extending the application period to December 31, 2020, and that's a generous 5 years, right? But things are moving very slowly right now. So a thought that I had would be to say that we would extend the application to December 2028 when it auto-renews. However, it gets reviewed. If we do not want to do an auto-renew at that time, we don't, so that this is just renewed at that point. So that's my first suggestion.
You want to add some language there, you're saying?
I don't know that the draft would be changing, because it's really the ordinance that hasn't been written yet. So the second thing is the limit on number of eligible units. Again, I'm concerned, because this is another thing that if somebody's putting their application in and they see there's a limit, let's say we've got a couple applications in, and I don't know if they have to have their unit numbers exactly where they are, but if we had 4 200 units and one's 213 and one's 216, we could hit that ceiling really well, really quickly. So the another suggestion that I had is that you would get to at 600 units, it would trigger a review to see if we want to extend that also as well. So that the ceiling can be on both of those can be raised with triggers. So those are two things that I'd like to see. And again, this is sort of a compromise between throwing it all out and keeping it all the same. To be able to have review that at a certain point and say, what's going on? We don't have a crystal ball. We don't know what's happening. We've got hundreds and hundreds of units that we are supposed to have because of the GMA. This is a logical place to put them. This is mainly market rate housing, and that will, the way that this helps with affordable housing is it increases stock. And so there's less demand. And so I don't know if that would make apartments less, or maybe make the more available.
But the whole idea that I'm thinking of right now is increasing stock. And the most logical place for me to be built, that I think of to build apartments, is down in the urban center and down in Tukwila Valley South, because it's really made for that. It's dense. It's going to be dense down there anyway. And that's why 800 is good. But if we could trigger a review, I think that that might be a little bit more palatable for those that are looking at this in the future. So that, and so there's two right there. And then the other thing is an application deadline within 18 months of receiving their conditional certification. So I don't know if that would be also something that might scare people away, to recommend requiring applications. Well, not scare people away. It's just, it's so competitive now in all the cities to keep us competitive. This is why I'm even talking about these, as far as getting people that are looking at our housing. 18 months, is that long enough? And so those are my comments. And so we have your Phil Combs from Sigali Properties, and they're the ones who really brought this up and asked, you know, where are we at with this? Yeah. So is there any way you could substantiate what I've said or fill in maybe some places that I missed or give examples so I'm not just making this up that you have personally within the organization you're in?
This is great, by the way. This is such a good move by the city, I think, to get this program going again. And just for background, if you're not familiar with it, the cities around us offer this. And so it makes it very hard for a developer to say, hey, I want to go into Tukwila when this program's not offered, because costs are so difficult and the barriers to enter are already there. And it's not the top tier market of the region. So all those things kind of send people to other places unintentionally. And so getting this going just gives us one more line in the water. I think this is a great play. For each of those ideas you suggested, I would be on board with all of the things you said right there. Having an extension automatic, I think, makes a lot of sense, because then that's administratively less work for the city or for the staff. And it's just an auto renew. Assuming the program is still what we think it is. We've got some history seeing this program elsewhere, and I've worked on with the different versions of this program, from City of Seattle to the east side, and also down and Tacoma, and watching these properties go in. So all of that is good. I think the idea is, I get the limit idea, and I think that this is, I guess I would package it as, if we do a cap, I would call it the starting spot, so that we can see how it works, because to me, it's less of a tax shift and more of a tax abatement for just real estate. And so there's a lot of revenue that comes in outside of this. I think that it's real easy to not see that. But I also get, you don't want to burden the system too fast. So to me, I like the idea of no limit, because I think that what you're going to run into is developers being constrained by that number at some point. All the properties that were done under MFTE, I think it was for a window of time that was tested and done, and then it was over. And then we hadn't really seen anything else since then that was market rate. And if we want to see market rate and the mixed affordable housing combination, I think that's a good one to consider. So on the unit count, you guys are right. I think you said 100 and 150, 200. We're seeing a lot of them up to 300 as well. 275, 300 is not that uncommon. More than that gets a lot less common. So I think the average is about 200, which puts you at about four of these projects. So going back to your example, if it is just barely over by some amount of units, that probably would be an unnecessary. I would suggest that, changing that to make it so that it could roll in and then refresh You know, I like the idea of having a reset so that you always can address your supply. And if I were to wave a magic wand, I would try it. I would say whatever your housing goal is, that would be your max or that would be your cap. But I also get the idea that, hey, let's pace ourselves on this. So, you know, I'll defer to council and also the committee here to, you know, decide what's best. I will say I haven't seen a cap anywhere else. None come to mind off the top of my head, but there might be some out there. Building application deadline. Because I haven't seen the cap, I don't know what kind of constraints this could create. I get the idea that the Mr. Speck was explaining. I guess I can empathize with that. I don't know how you solve for that, because if someone puts their application in queue just to do a due diligence, and I'm only sharing this because this is like a scenario that I could see happening in multifamily real easy. They get something contracted up under spec and they're going to try and grab it. And then they do all their exploration while they have it. And then they let the contract go if they can't get it to work. And then you just wasted a bunch of everybody's time when someone else could have been in there who's a real developer, really able to do it. I don't know how to solve that. So I don't have the answer, but that's just something I could see as a potential with that. So if you don't have a cap, then that's not an issue, but hopefully that's helpful. And as far as illustrative examples, we do have people we talk to who are interested in doing housing, but have told us we won't do it without MFTE. Now, how many of these will come to fruition if we get it? I don't know. You know, that's really hard to tell because we don't really have that track record. The other thing that we're fighting is inflation and interest rates. And interest rates are huge still right now. To get one of the big reasons people won't build is the interest rate obstacle right now. You just can't get financing or get it to pencil unless you're doing affordable only, and a lot of affordable housing is going in here, but I don't know a lot of market rate housing going in here right now. So that's something that I think we're trying to supplement. And the good thing about Sequoia South, I like the map overlay you guys have done. This to me makes a lot of sense. I think this, you know, I'm a big long-term picture guy, but I love what it's very forward thinking to say, okay, this is our urban growth area. This is the reason we're targeting it. And Tequila South makes a ton of sense for the exact same reasons. All of that plus no displacement. And I'm a big fan of something you can easily do without avoiding displacement. And so.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. Thank you. So I'm going to make a comment then. Staff probably has some thoughts about this too, since we've thrown out a whole bunch of new stuff. I do want to say that what Councilmember Quinn was talking about like reflecting on what was going on. We have those two triggers of review for the every 5 years and the 800. Then that sort of makes that happen, right? And that's something that would at that point you'd be doing all the things that you were talking about when you get to a a trigger point. I'm not sure if we like using the word trigger anymore, but I don't know a word, something that triggers, so are we going to do the next set of whatever? Mm-hmm. So that was my comment. And now, Derek, I want to take it back to you because we've thrown out a whole bunch of stuff here. What do you think?
Sure. And I appreciate the opportunity to interact on it. So going back to the council comments, so Councilmember Flynn's comment about a tracking mechanism, we certainly can do some kind of tracking mechanism and figure out what kind of recording would be useful in that. I think that may actually play into Councilmember Hogarty, what you were raising.
Exactly.
Because I want to be really upfront. It's like, I'm going to be very honest and open with my perspective on it, but of course we will follow the council's direction. And so when it comes to the auto renew, I definitely hear the concern about when something's got a application sunset clause in it, there's always a chance that we might lose somebody that might want to apply, but they look at the code and they say, oh, well, this expires in a year. That would not be enough time for me to get an option on the property and to go through the process. So I'm just not going to do anything. The flip side of that, though, is property owners and developers start making it expecting, and the expectations of the tax incentive gets baked into the economics of all that development region-wide. And we're suffering from that today, and I'm using the word suffering there. I mean, I've talked to developers that are, you know, Maria Barrientos in Seattle at like a BizNow event, talked to her afterwards. She's developed a bunch of apartments in Seattle. How important is this multifamily tax exemption she got in Seattle? It's critical. And this is the Seattle market. And for our development world to have that tax exemption to develop in Seattle with the way the rents are, when the rents are that high, that money is going somewhere. And so if that's what the developer has to go, it's in that. And it could actually accrue to the property owners in some of those cases. And so my recommendation is it's really healthy, good, long-term policy to not bake tax incentives in permanently, to have them be something that's a temporary period to get the market up and running. Let's see how the market is. And if the market's not able to do it on its own, then sure, we can extend tax exemptions. But other cities, I think, have made a mistake by letting their tax exemptions programs have no sunset clauses. And I think long term, that creates a distortion in the marketplace because then that housing development becomes almost addicted to tax incentives. And we're suffering for that a little bit because, like what Phil said, the competition with other cities. So the reason that we're recommending the 5 years is to try to find that balance of not getting a message in the market that you can always count on a tax exemption. But we think 5 years is enough to get the word out there, to get some of these projects going. And with the tracking mechanism, if it looks like we're running through that cap and we need to extend it, we can come back to council with an extension. Mm-hmm. I do appreciate Phil being sensitive about staff time and saying, you know, by having it auto renew, we would save staff time not having to come back. But I would rather us come back with an extension. Extension, if all we're doing is extending the time period, that's a pretty easy thing to do. To me, if it says auto renew, that's the same thing as not having any deadline in there, any sunset clause. So we would recommend keep the sunset clause. If we feel like the 2018 is too tight of, or 2028, 5 years is too tight of a time frame, by all means, you know, extend it a couple of years or something. Keep in mind that 2028 is when the application would need to come
in. That was a question. Okay, that's a big deal.
And so once the application comes in, the city has like a certain amount of time to approve the application. Then we negotiate a contract with the applicant. It's only after that contract's negotiated that then the city issues this document, we call this conditional certificate. Then they get 3 years after that to actually develop and build. And so that three-year period, they get that conditional certificate saying you are entitled to this tax exemption. If you do what you say you're going to do, you're entitled to it. And so you've still got 3 years to finish locking in your property, to go through the development. And that can be tight, but usually by that time, they've already got a property they already know. They've already got. And so anyway, so our recommendation would be to stay with that, but we understand if you'd like to extend the application period.
Okay, so I want to keep this moving. And also give it time. There's balance. These other ones are for review only. So first of all, I want to ask my fellow council members, there's goodwill here to move it on to forward it on, right? Because now we're talking about like three different things here. So I want to stop and ask my fellow council members this. So are you comfortable with when we move this on, with keeping it at December 31st, 2028, knowing that we have requested a tracking mechanism so that we'll keep our finger on the pulse of this, knowing that, you know, if it looks like, wow, things are going like great guns. So
can I clarify?
Yes.
So if an application is submitted in November of 2028, they would be able to use these rules, and they would have 3 years also.
Okay.
Right.
If the application was submitted December 31st, 2028.
Yeah.
So and that's how that PROS is working. They submitted their application before the end of the sunset,
yeah,
and they're able to move forward, and they have 3 years.
Yes.
Yeah. And so we're baking in, if you want to call it that, you know, some sort of tracking and keeping reviewing on that. And then we'll know plenty ahead of that, sure, whether or not to. Okay. So yes, keep it at what it is, right? Okay. Okay. So then, and now you probably have comments on the other ones too.
So on the cap, I totally understand. And on increasing the cap does provide greater certainty to potential developers to see a cap. There's not like a magic number on the number of units for the cap. I do think that they're, you know, Phil and I are going to have just agree to disagree on the economics of how this works, right? We've had lots of conversations, lots of exchange in a healthy way, but we're, you know, if you look at the April staff report, you'll see the economics of how economic development looks at it. And so because, you know, staff feels like there can be costs to provide service to new residential development, we think it's important to be very thoughtful about how many tax exemptions we give so that we have tax revenue to provide services. And of course, new development requires less services than in some cases than older development, depending on the style of development. So that's why we recommend having a cap, but there's no magic number. So if now for tracking it, well, not if the council does approve this, we will be tracking it.
Yes.
And so if it looks like we get a couple of applications very quickly and that 800 unit gets gobbled up right away, then we can always amend it to increase the number of units at that time. And then my gut feeling is my gut feeling is in the community, it's probably easier to get a smaller program adopted now, and then once there's a track record of a couple good projects that look good, people are happy with, then to increase that cap later. A bigger cap now, I think, could cause some concerns early in the process.
Okay. So I'm just sorry. I'm kind of
sorry.
No. That's good. We have that idea. Again, here's our tracking mechanism that's working to in order for us to keep evaluating this and seeing if we need to expand the program. So my question is, leave it at 800, and again, we have the tracking mechanism that they're going to add in. In some terms, you'll figure out what that means later on. Okay.
But the one question I wanted to ask was, Mr. Combs said that he didn't know whether cities had a number or that they don't have a number.
Uh-huh.
So we're the only one in the region that has a number?
That's my understanding. Yep.
Okay.
I think.
Well, we can revisit this again in the. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So I think that the, you know, 800 or, you know, kind of 4 gets us a start. And thinking about making good policy, right, it should be informed by how the market is also reacting to it. I also agree with Derek. There could be some opposition depending on how large your amount is and knowing it's going for 5 years. Which is significant. What I really like in your presentation was really taking an approach of expanding our definition of kind of the economics of this, right? And that it isn't just this 8-year MFTE and tax exemption, but it's actually an economic driver who could potentially tell you how well we rate in the market for these opportunities, but it's also something we can measure. So what I would suggest potentially in the future packet is to be able to list the other jurisdictions that actually have the MFTE around, to be able to demonstrate that we have action around us. You don't need every detail in there, but I just think there will be more openness knowing that that this has been something that they've implemented in a small amount of time and they've actually realized some options. So I just think you can probably play with the 800. Let's say I have 216 and you got 3 others that had 216. That puts the number over 800. But so I don't know if there's some creative wording to say, you know, the goal was to have participation. We actually have 4, which just puts us over by 60 or something like that. But I think the measurement and just getting a sense of the market and how open it is, I think it makes sense. And what it does is it allows that allows it to be more sustainable in the future if it needs to be re-upped.
Is it kind of just assumed that the director's discretion could like waive 16 units or something like that? Or
if we haven't written that in.
That might be another way to make it more flexible.
If you would feel comfortable, if there's concern, I would recommend the easiest thing is just to bump it up to 1,000.
Okay, you know, yeah. We're not going to have a bunch of 300-unit. I think that's something.
If that's what the committee
That's a couple in each, like a couple here and a couple there with, yeah, easy. Yeah. I think that might be better. And then if it's kind of, we might not get anything in this market, right? But that way we've got the cap. The cap is generous. We have a cap.
And we'll monitor, and it's very easy for us to track. And so if it turns out that, hey, we've gotten 4 applications all of a sudden now, you know, 1,000 units have been claimed for applications. All we have to do is just email the council, say, FYI, here's the update. And if the council's interested, then we can just come back and increase the cap at that time if that's what's needed.
Okay.
But are we saying the starting spot now of 1,000?
Yeah, I would. I would say, I mean, that's really generous, really generous. Yeah. And it's still a cap. I doubt we're going to get to it.
I would love to see that.
Yeah.
But I just think that there's this piece around we're rolling it out. We don't really know what the market's saying. Right? We're rolling it out, being thoughtful on measuring the participation. So if we jump to 1,000, and I guess in some ways I'm conservative in this. Look, the goal of the policy is dead on. Not everybody agrees or understands it. So having an intention to grow if necessary. And I also think here's the other thing that I wish I would say, because I forgot when I was up. The cost sharing is real when the narrative is carried by one or two folks that don't want to see it happen. The narrative can be driven by the what the market is saying and the fact that we are measuring these processes. So, I mean, that's where I'm at, and I'm all for this, but I also know how quickly we revert to the most negative aspect of something like this.
That's true. So, so I don't know if there's going to be opposition to this, but
probably
the 800, if we could just say that in the process, that if we need to expand that, we do. I mean, yeah, that would work too. That'd be fine.
Well, the term was used, a starting point.
Yeah.
A starting spot. Yeah. And if I could go back to process. So at this stage, the decision is not really on these particular amendments. It's more of just, do you want to hold a public hearing or not and look at the map? Yeah. So the map is the key thing right now. What would happen is, we would bring a proposed ordinance changes to the council in August for the public hearing on the 17th. And really that's where you would see us write these into the ordinances. So it'd be easy if at that time, if the council wanted to change a number from 800 to 1,000 at that time,
let's do that.
Then that could just be something where the council could decide based on community feedback. You know what, we should be a little more cautious, let's stick to 800, or after public hearing, if there's not much community feedback, the council could say, oh, well, actually, we feel a bit more comfortable going to 1,000. So we could leave 800 in the report if you want, and then the council could kind of weigh the temperature during the public hearing process in August. But we're open to what you direct.
Yeah, I was thinking that too. And I said, let's do that. I suggest we do that. That's what I'm telling you. So we're going to leave it at 800, keeping in mind that we can tweak this. That's what I'm thinking. In full council, we can tweak it again. Building permit deadline, we're running short. I say just leave it like that for now.
We'll be monitoring it so we're able to see, oh, we've got X number of applications. Yeah. We need to, if that's an issue.
I don't think you're going to be trying to turn people down that have viable. But yeah, let's talk about that more. I think the main thing is to send this through and get it going. Opportunities to tweak. And that's why I had it first. I wanted to really get some idea. So we're not like hemming and hawing about 800 to 1,000 with a full council. which it gets cumbersome. So I think that's good. But I think we're all pretty sure about the tracking mechanism that we want that in there in okay. some form, whatever that works with you. And was there anything else that we asked for? I said maybe per director's discretion, but we can talk about that more later.
Sure.
We don't need to do that. So here's our resolution. And then this resolution then goes to, did you say a public meeting or public?
So we recommend that you forward this resolution to Monday's COW meeting
mm-hmm.
and then asking them to then vote on the resolution at this next Monday's special meeting.
Okay.
And then if the council approves the resolution of intent, mm-hmm. then we'll move forward with the public notice that mm-hmm. goes out, and then the public hearing will be in August, and then that's where we provide the proposed changes to the city's municipal code.
Okay.
And in the meantime, then, if you run into people with questions, encourage them to look at the April staff report, because that's where we have all that background information, and so if you run into others that have questions about the program.
All right. So let's thank you so much. We have three more items. I just want to do a high overview here. Derek's going to give us an update on the, so that Derek can leave after this instead of having that at the end. Are the two of you okay?
Yeah.
Did I say Cindy?
Yes.
I did. Okay. So we've got the economic, that's for information. The SEPA, that one is for going to, which one is to go to the planning commission? So it's just basically a touch point and then planning commission that comes back. Which one?
No planning commission, but we'll come back after the public notice period is over with the full ordinance for you.
And this is for the SEPA?
Yeah.
Okay. And then how about ADU? So
that would need to go to planning commission.
Okay. So these are just ones that we're getting briefed and then it's moving forward. So so we have about maybe 10 minutes for each one. So we've got about 30 minutes. So, go ahead. And thank you for...
Which one are we doing now?
We're going to go with D, okay. Then A, then B.
Okay. So this item D is the economic development strategy. This is the purpose is just an update. And so this starts on page 37 of your packet. And Elliot Weiss, if you might remember Elliot being in the prior meeting, but he's with Community Attributes. That's our perspective on the project. He's in the meeting now, so he's available for questions. I told him he didn't need to prepare anything for tonight's meeting. This is just sharing information with you. The reason we're sharing information with you now is, as you may remember, we had to put this on hold for a few months this year. We've got it re-going again. And so this item is, we're going to be back to you August 7th with a very key meeting. That's where we're going to be proposing to you the proposed strategies and actions. So far to date, you looked previously at an overall vision statement and goals, and you'll see the revised current draft vision statement and goals are in your packet. They start on page 48. And you'll see them in the highlighted areas. And so that reflects some of the feedback that you gave us before. But then because of August 7th TCD meeting, where we look at the strategy and goals, we think you're going to want some time to really think about that. So for tonight, we just wanted to give you a whole lot of information. We know it's a huge packet. We're not going to go through any of it other than to say what it is for all the engagement we did with the community boards and commissions, in your packet. It's like a 100-page packet, but you can see the comments, the notes that we took in those meetings, and in their staff report here on page 37, you'll see a summary of the different engagement that that we've done on the project. And really, I'm just going to end it in 1 minute here, where on page 38, basically I just looked at all that engagement results, things that CAI gathered from the online survey and the other information and the discussions. And basically you'll see, I just highlighted some of the themes that we're seeing from the engagement. And so one thing is, number one there on page 38, the wide support for embracing our diversity, that actually ties back to one of the goals that we've got. But, and I don't think it'll surprise, I don't think any of these are going to surprise any of us. But we saw that in the comments from people in the survey comments and all the other types of engagement we did. There's a lot of support for embracing our diversity in a lot of ways, not just saying, hey, let's have a cultural event, but let's actually support diversity of the cultures in our small businesses, because having a lot of different kinds of small businesses and people and backgrounds
makes it a more interesting, better community. Number two, as you know, a strong interest in improving Tukwila's quality of life. So a lot of comments came through about doing things to just make our community a better quality of life. My indentations are off here. Desire for greater safety was like the number one thing under the quality of life. As you can expect, there's a lot of concerns about public safety, and that permeated a lot of our comments. I know the council members hear this a lot, desire for more amenities, and you can see the amenities listed there, and we heard lots of comments about those kinds of things. Number five really is showing that Tukwila, what I noticed was there's a caringness to the people that filled out the surveys and provided input, and there's a desire to help and provide services to help other people. So people weren't always just answering things about what they wanted themselves. They were also talking about what they thought others in the community needed. Like, oh, we need more education for people, even somebody else themselves would need it. Six, a lot of strong support for doing more with helping small business and entrepreneurs. Seven won't be a shock to you either, but one of the types of engagement we did was we contracted with the Chamber of Commerce to go door to door in the Southern District and on TIB. They asked a very simple question to hear some feedback from the businesses. When you look at those questions and the answers which are in there, the number one thing in there, it's all about property crime. And as we all know, there's been a lot of property crime statewide, nationally. It's not just Tukwila, but those concerns are still happening out there a lot. And then a lot of support for trying to help education and training become available to people. And then there were some, you know, we didn't ask specific questions about casinos, but I noticed there were definitely a few comments that were where people did not want casinos in the city. And I point that out just because part of an economic development strategy is about how do we have a strong tax base for the city. Casinos do help with our tax base, but I wanted to point that out that there still is some concerns about casinos, and so that may not be an easy solution. And with that, we're just available to answer any questions, and you can ask questions anytime, and we don't have to cover them tonight if you're tight on time for the other items.
Okay. Did from community attributes, I'm sorry, is it Elliot? Elliot, did you want to just say a couple words since you're online?
I will, thank you, since I'm on. At the risk of you possibly hearing my kids in the background, I apologize if that happens. But, you know, I think everything that Derek just gave an overview of checks out. That's consistent with what we heard in six focus groups that we held over the last week and a half, which I don't think, you know, the findings from which Derek did not have at his disposal when he drafted this. Two things that I might add that came through in the focus groups more strongly than were represented here was an aspiration to be a larger urban center and to embrace sort of a regional perspective. You know, Tukwila is at sort of an unprecedented crossroads of major transportation infrastructure. You have so many people passing through, whether they're actually making stops in Tukwila or not. You have a lot of people that go to South Center, perhaps not even realizing that it's in Tukwila. And so the idea of capturing more traffic, the idea of investing in regional efforts, the idea of developing recognizable places so that people associate these experiences and these assets with Tukwila came through strongly in the focus groups. And then I would also just say that it's important to note that things like public safety are not just a resident concern. They're a shared concern amongst your residents and your business community, which is really important because that means everybody's rowing in the same direction on that front. So I wouldn't want to say, oh, we heard it in the resident feedback but didn't hear it in the business feedback. We very much heard it in both. And almost everyone, whether it's a business owner or a resident, has pointed to that as the number one concern. And we had some conversations with city staff and with others, including business owners, about whether or not this is more of a perception issue or more of a reality issue. And I think there are elements of both, but it very much sounds like it's a reality issue, that there needs to be improvement in terms of, you know, actual crime reduction. And then Tukwila needs to communicate out its progress on that front as it makes progress. So I suppose those are a couple of things I would add. I've got more, of course. We're fresh off these focus groups. I mentioned they were just all completed within the last week and a half. So a lot of information buzzing around in my head, but I'll leave it at that for now. And then I'm happy to answer questions as we move forward.
All right. Councilmember McLeod, comments and or questions?
Well, I like what's coming together here. I wanted to ask, on page 38, when it comes back to the engagement, the city purchased a report from the African Community Housing and Development. Is that who the report was purchased from?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
I like the list of people that you've engaged here to get more information. So well done there.
Thank you.
And I've always been about Tukwila having more destinations. So I think that's really important that people know they're in Tukwila. They intentionally come here from other parts of the region to experience something in Tukwila. We have a few, but I'm a big fan of more gathering places.
Thank you. Councilmember Quinn.
I was just happy to receive the packet. We kind of read through high level of, and being able to see the changes that we were able to incorporate. I think what's more important as when it leaves here, right, the way I read it was spend the time, at least for me, and have the context, which is laid out here based on the questions, because I honestly, nothing surprises me. As a matter of fact, we hear this a lot. Mm-hmm. But the problem is some of the loud voices say we need something different. Mm-hmm. And so being able to hold the space that's in this report
mm-hmm.
is going to be important.
Yeah.
And so, and, you know, I think the other thing that I really liked, and it gave me some heartburn, is that protection of quality of life. And in this report, when it comes to budget, this is more documentation mm-hmm. on what our priorities are. I could say that there are some things, especially around public safety, that a good amount of us on the council understood and need for an investment. There, you and I have kind of talked about, like, prior to kind of this natural progression, like, well, I think we're okay. And it's like, well, we're going to get rid of our security cameras.
Mm-hmm.
Landlords are going to, well, we don't need them. And when COVID hit, that's exactly what you need.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd be curious around the tenant versus owner properties, because the other thing we learned through COVID was, it sounds good to say that we shouldn't treat property crime like other crime. And I think in a sense, we don't. But there is also impacts when a property crime occurs. Anyone present is going to have an impact.
Mm-hmm.
And then the sense of safety and awareness gets built by that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Who you are, it may sound good, but if you're in a place where somebody's feeling it has an impact on you, whether you want to acknowledge it or not. So I think there's some really good chunks in here, but I also think it's important to have the contextual pieces because, you know, I think we should move away from the Pacific Northwest slogans and actually talk about the substance of what people are experiencing and maybe talk about the commonalities around our social contract with one another. It's all things that you've heard before, but it actually shows up in detail as folks talk about their sense of safety and quality of life.
And if I could address that and try to not get too choked up by it, but if you, I can't remember which page is in here, but if you look at, so we contracted with Talitha Consults and they went out to two apartment buildings in Tukwila and they did a survey. They surveyed like 50 of those residents and they picked those apartment buildings and they knew people, they knew the managers, but they also knew they were low income apartment buildings. And when you read the comments, so we went to, I'm sorry, not those apartments, but no, I got too good. So we went to the Black Student Union at Foster High and had a focus group there, or like a listening session, I should call it. And those students, some of them lived in apartment buildings there in Tukwila. And it was, to me, it made me really sad when you hear a comment from a high school student saying, yeah, our apartment buildings smell like drugs and alcohol. And for some reason, different comments affect people differently. But for me, that hit me like, wow, our youth have to live in a place where they feel like where they're living, like drugs and alcohol. And so
I think there's a, for some reason, like there are some comments in there that I think will resonate with different people and on some of the needs that hopefully we can address.
Thank you. Well, we're going to see this again. Lots of really good data backing up for us council members. You know, I'm like, I knew that, and here's the data. And so I did skim through it and look at, so I got to this place, and then I ran out of time. So it was really good. Isn't it the most fascinating thing? I'm just going to say one thing, and that is that we know this, but it's so interesting to see the data that our community here in Tukwila is at 66% of the median income of King County. So we're a third below, and a third of our residents make around 40, maybe it was 49%, I don't know, but in the 40s. A third of our residents. That's a lot. And, you know, we say this all the time, but to see this data again is just, it's so good.
Well, and that was Elliot to pull that data together. So we
thank you, Elliot.
Your work on that.
We'll be talking again. Thank you. So
yeah. And team, I might add. But yeah.
Yeah.
Happy to help pull that together. I think, you know, Derek and I are working on some revisions to this landscape assessment, as well as a more fulsome summary of stakeholder engagement to include the focus group feedback. So we'll have more information to bring to bear the next time we speak. And that might result in some targeted edits to the vision and the goals as you see them presented in this packet, but it sounds like, and I'm hopeful, that we're moving in the right direction.
Thank you so much. Thank you, council members. All right. So there's no action. That's an update. So thank you for bearing with us, and Nora and Neil. Mm-hmm. So we're at the SEPA thresholds, which look to me like we're just matching most of them up to what now is at the state level.
That's true. So Nora Gerloff, Community Development, and I'm coming back with you for something we talked about a year ago when we were looking at different streamlining options. So they had some support on the committee. So we're proposing that we raise our thresholds for when a SEPA checklist is required to be up at the top. And I will say that I picked the top level because we have to do notice to agencies and tribes, and I wanted to give the council some flexibility. So even if you decide to go lower than that, we're still covered by the notice. If I picked lower and then you wanted to go higher, then it would restart notice. So those are starting points, and we can certainly discuss. If there's any concerns you have now, I can certainly research that and give you options before we come back with the full ordinance format in 60 days or so in September. And just, you know, in terms of some background, the only time SEPA really comes into play for development is when we issue a mitigated determinative non-significance or an EIS, but EISs are pretty rare, right? And so we very rarely, our codes are good. They cover a lot of stuff. We very rarely have an unusual project that we feel like we need to condition through SEPA. Like there's something about it that just falls through the gaps of our regulations, and that's where SEPA comes in. I don't think we've issued a mitigated DNS since maybe 2019. And even when we do, it's a really big project like Prologis that it's not going from 10,000 square feet to 30,000 square feet. It's over 100,000 square feet. So I don't think when raising the thresholds here, we're going to miss anything that we've been seeing as needing conditions to keep from falling through the cracks. What it does mean is paperwork for the applicant and a fair amount of staff time and procedure that's really not changing anything or preventing environmental. So that's the nutshell. I'm also putting in a couple, some housekeeping stuff, like we changed the title of our environmentally sensitive ordinances to critical ordinances. Mm-hmm. And then there's two sections. The South Center SEPA exemption has expired, so I'm suggesting we take that out of it. And then the Boeing planned action is also way out of date. And I have spoken with Boeing about it, so they know that that's coming. So like I said, if there's any feedback you'd like to give me, I'll take that away, and then see me again in September.
Yeah. Councilmember Quinn.
Yeah, I'll be streamlining my questions. No surprises. I think the thing that you opened with, that makes so much sense. So you can go, if we put a limit and you go too low, then you have to resubmit. So I'm comfortable with the numbers that you have here. Also, and I had a scenario, but I'll just say, it's captured by, you know, how large the proposal is. And I guess my one is the one that we all know on 56.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how does this necessarily relate to that? But then again, I'm probably answering my own question of, like, people are going to do things
mm-hmm.
outside of the code.
Right.
Assuming nobody's watching.
You know, and there are things that kick it out of this, like anything on lands covered by water. So anything with wetlands or streams, you're going to do CEPA that doesn't apply to you. So there are some bumpers in this already.
So I'm comfortable with it. It made perfect sense. And I'm on my tracking thing. I'm sure we'll continue to test if it's one in 2019, but then it's already addressed the size of the thing. That's kind of a good assessment all these years.
Yeah, and just, I mean, the bump in the multifamily seems like a big bump, but just keep in mind that the PROs, the Holden and Marvell, were under the CEPA exemption for South Center. So we've seen projects that size where we didn't have an issue or had some need to use CEPA to fill gaps.
Mm-hmm. The one question I wanted to ask, the financial impact, would reduce permit revenue. We did talk about like tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands.
Oh, I mean, it's like $500 a piece and we get a few of them. And it doesn't cover the staff time. It would be a bonus, actually.
But that was the only question I wanted to ask.
Okay. So I just have one question. On page 2, it says single family less than 1500, the threshold is 9, it's going to 30 and not 100. I was like, was that a typo? Or, you know, we're never going to have more than 30 of those anyway, right? You know, it's just we're landlocked. So
our code doesn't have a small lot single family section in it. If we did put one in through missing middle, we could look at raising it. But also, I can't think of a place other than maybe Tuckerilla South where you do a 30 lot subdivision.
It's like, was that a typo or it doesn't really, and then it's like, wait a minute, it doesn't matter. We're not going to, that's not going to happen anyway. So I doubt. So, okay.
Uh-huh.
I am, so this goes on to,
it will loop back to you guys with and then move its way through.
Okay, excellent. All right. And then our final is the ADUs and miscellaneous code updates. And this will be going to Planning Commission next. And so this is our first test point. And so we're just kind of being aware of what's going to them, really.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Chair and Council members. Neil Tabor, Senior Planner, and I have Isaac Glor, Associate Planner here with me tonight as well. Just kind of run through some things here. I'll try to be kind of brief and straightforward, leave some time for discussion, questions, clarification. So we have a lot going on, obviously. There's the comprehensive plan update we're doing right now. We've seen a lot of movement in the legislative cycle this session as well, which has some requirements for cities to update, as well as we're always looking at our code and looking for ways we can streamline, looking for ways we can make improvements, make it clear, kind of just do the best we can there as well. So all those things are happening. For most of the legislative items, they have an effective date of June 1st, 2025, or 6 months after the deadline for the comprehensive plan update. So we have kind of three big packages I would refer to there. One is accessory dwelling units that was in HB 1337. One is middle housing, which was in HB 1110. And the other was design review, or having certain characteristics of any sort of design review standards you have that was mattered across two bills. So all those have that same effective date, and we're trying to sync up our efforts to take kind of what we see as the lower hanging fruit there as part of this and move those forward faster, knowing that things like missing middle clarifying some of the design review. We'll need more community input. We'll need more discussion. We'll take more time to actually get into the weeds with those things. So within this, we have the ADU bill being the big portion of that. We have some streamlining items. We have some just general process improvements we found. I'll run through them quickly. So as Director Gerloff mentioned, there is another item here that was part of the streamlining package that was talked about last summer with some mild tweaks to it, which was related to when we actually do a code update, what is a zoning code or a development code update versus a comprehensive plan update? So clarifying that these are on two different tracks. So if staff were to come forward and say, hey, we found this error in our code, or we found a way to make it look clearer for anyone using it versus someone coming in as a developer or applicant initiated amendment or a comprehensive plan update that would go through the normal docketing process, we need to show clear distinction between those two. It benefits, it's been advised by our city attorney, it just shows clear process. Within that, it was noted last year that our process is a little more burdensome on some things like this than a lot of other cities. So we have two public hearings. Most other places in the region do not have it. They just have one. So we have some options there depending on your thoughts as to either presenting the council the option to remove one of those on clearer code amendments or more straightforward ones, whether that's moving the one at Planning Commission or at council. That'd be something we're looking for direction on. Some of the other just improvements for the process would be the need for a variance on substandard lots or lots that do not meet the minimum size requirement. So the scenario would be that your lot is 5,500 square feet. That would be under our minimum size. You can meet all the other requirements for setbacks, for lot coverage, for heights, for other things like that on your vacant lot. You wanted to build a single family home. You would currently have to go through a variance in front of the hearing examiner. So that would be something that would be equivalent to a generally very complex land use process. It would require a public hearing. It would require a lot of other steps in the process that would be what we see as far above what the actual impact of that would be. So that's a way to just streamline. It uses less staff time. It's less cost to the applicant. It's better use of everyone's time as we see it. I'm just jumping through these quickly. Some of the others, just to comply with state law, we highlighted were home occupations or home-based businesses. So currently, we don't really have a distinction for if you run an adult family home or a group home out of a residential property. We do not allow you to use accessory structures, like if you had an accessory dwelling unit on site, even though it's a residential living structure, you could not, by the letter of law of our code, use it for your group home or your adult family home. It doesn't really meet state law, so we'd either need to not have that restriction on all home occupations or home-based businesses outright, or at least do a carve-out or caveat for those types of businesses. Another one would be just a simple kind of line item for Tukula South, updating our code with other standards we've already adopted, getting to those to remove the reference that is no longer applicable. Wireless code currently has two different paths on one of the procedures for saying it's a director's decision, it's a hearing examiner's decision, it's incongruent with each other. So little things like that we want to clean up through the process. And then I'll pass that to Isaac for more on accessory dwelling.
Yeah, so HB 1337 was the bill around accessory dwelling units. That's another one where the due date is 6 months post adoption of our next comprehensive plan. With that one, pretty big bill, the requirements were that we have to allow at least two accessory dwelling units, either attached or detached in any combination. On all lots that allow single family homes, we can't require owner occupancy for those ADUs. We must permit ADUs up to 1,000 square feet and up to 25 feet tall. And we have to allow them to be condominiumized. So the sale of an ADU separate from the single family home without any sort of land division or short plat process. We're not allowed to have design considerations for ADUs that are stricter than that for the principal unit, so that's for the single family house. And we can't require parking within a half mile walking distance of a transit stop. And so that is everything that is a better service than, equal to or better service than 15 minute frequencies during peak hours. So that would be most of the bus routes within Tukwila as well, would count as a major transit stop. So currently our ADU code is more restrictive than our neighbors. It's also pretty far out of step with those state requirements. We only allow one ADU. We have our ADU size restrictions are lower than 1,000 square feet. Our maximum height is 20 feet. We require owner occupancy. We require parking for every ADU at least one space. And if it's more than one bedroom, we require more than one space, more than one, or at one per bedroom. We don't allow ADU condominiumization, and we have design standards for ADUs that we don't have for single-family residences. So we have a proposed code that would bring our standards in line with the state requirements and more closely match that of our neighbors like Burien and Seattle.
We see that as one of the more prescriptive ones we can take. It's more off the shelf. We don't have a lot of choice beyond just expanding beyond what the state minimums are. So we've seen City of Kent has recently adopted a similar package that I think with one small provision they were already working on complies with state law. So we see that ones we can turn around more quickly, move it forward more quickly than some of the others we'll have to get into a little bit more. And just going on from Isaac's statement, there are some parking maximum standards we can apply near transit that are already codified in the state law. So those are part of the 2020 legislative cycle that we just need to catch up on and reflect to show in our code that if you're at a location where your property meets one of those standards, either for multifamily or for accessory dwelling units, there's certain maximums or limitations on parking we require based on for the one for multifamily in general, whether it's market rate, whether it's senior housing or whether it's affordable housing, there's different thresholds and kind of things of levels of service, definitions of transit. So we need to comply with that for if a developer comes in and they meet the criteria for that. We cannot require more parking stalls than is allowed by state law. So a similar provision for the accessory dwelling units as well. And appreciate you bearing with us as you run through those pretty quickly. But again, options, we'd recommend that we move this forward to Planning Commission for further work. If there's feedback on kind of the different paths we could take with some of those, we'd definitely love to hear it as well.
Thank you. Councilmember McLeod?
My guess is you're going to have a robust conversation with the Planning Commission.
Mm-hmm. We always do.
Yes. But I don't know that about the only thing. I mean, since we see them as an advisory body, I want to hear what they say. So I wouldn't recommend pulling anything. Go ahead and submit them and see what they got to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, to be clear, when it's proposed, and you said this, but I should say again, that we're meeting the minimum standards of big law shares. And so I'm comfortable with this going forward. It's pretty intuitive and makes sense. But I think it's clear, like, these are like the minimum standards that we have to consider. So I'm comfortable.
You just said we didn't do more with ADUs. Didn't we, was it ADUs that we scrapped like in 2019 or 18? We had to go on to other things where we were going to work on that. I was like, that would have been work we didn't have to do if we'd
thinking about taking out short-term rentals, which is a whole big ball of wax, too.
Thank you.
Yeah, and that also would have probably might have been informed by this. So I'm just really glad that we didn't do work that would have gotten undone at the time. So, yes, I agree. Let's just send it on forward because we get it back afterwards and see what they say. So,
thank you.
That is good. Anybody have any miscellaneous?
Awesome.
All right. Thank you for letting us go through this, and I know that I appreciate that. So, yes, Peter.
Yeah.
Where? Well, let's just adjourn. Do you have anything to say? Because we got 4 minutes. Okay.
No.
What brings you here?
I just want to see how the sausage is made.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just we don't need to. Somebody wants to see how the sausage is made.
Yeah.
Wow. So we'll adjourn.